Hi, I'm Jack Grisham, and I'm an alcoholic. And I want to thank you guys for having me here, and happy birthday. And I hate the song. It's always bad. And if you're brand new, and if you want to hear a happy birthday sang right, you got to go to gay meetings, because they always do it good, real good there. And it's always on key. It's like a shocker. And anyway, I just love being sober, and it's nice. For Bob for picking me up, thank you very much. And my friend Edward's here, and it's nice to see him. We ran into each other in the bathroom, and it's nice. And not like that, but you know what I mean? Like in the, you know what I'm saying? And I just love being sober, and I wish you guys just for 1 minute, I wish especially the guys 1 minute could just step inside me for 1 second when my little girl comes up to give me a hug. And you know, that little toothless six-year-old, when she runs up and she sticks her arms around me and she says, I love you, and I hug her back, you know. And I wish you guys could be with me for 1 minute when my 18-year-old says, Dad, you're the most positive person I've ever met in my life. And that love, and to feel that, and to be surrounded by our family. And it's real hard, I believe, in Alcoholics Anonymous sometimes. We tell the new man, we say, if you want what we have, do what we do. Come on in, do what we do. But the trouble is, when you're brand new a lot of times coming in here, you can't see what we have. It's impossible to see what we have sometimes, because the gifts that we get from Alcoholics Anonymous, a lot of times, are not visible. You'll hear guys on the program say, I get real angry sometimes, I'll hear guys say, check out my new car, that's a gift of the program. Well, if it's a gift of the new program, give me the keys and I'll drive some new guys around in it. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, and you'll hear say, well, you know, hey, I got the money in my pocket, this is a gift of the program. Then buy books. You know what I'm saying? Do something with it, if that's the gift. That is not the gift of Alcoholics Anonymous. The gift of Alcoholics Anonymous is the ability to live happily without the car, without the family coming back, without money in your pocket, without any of those things, to live happily without physical goods. That's the gift of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's a universal gift. That's a gift that anyone can attain by working these steps and being here. And I'll tell you, I didn't have any of those gifts when I got here. I was 26 years old, living at my mother's house, and I always lived at my mother's, thank God. The Al-Anon people never got a hand on my mom, you know, and she's a perfect drunk mom. You know, every good gangster's got to have mom, you know. And it was funny, I was out at this meeting the other day, and this guy's sitting there, and he's all tough. You know, he's sitting there, right, and he's laying down who he's been beating on and all this stuff. I go, oh, what's up, gangster? I go, where you living? He goes, well, I'm over at my mom's down there. You know, it's like, all right, bro. You know, and like I said, my mom is the best drunk mom. I would go to jail, and I'd get out, and my mom would go, they're always picking on you. You know, that kind of thing, you know. I'd be out on the front yard sleeping. One of the neighbors would be complaining about finding me in the yard, you know, and my mom would go, he's a pioneer, he's an artist, you know, leave him, you know, like that kind of thing. And I do have a tie. It's in my pocket, but I got it. And just that kind of craziness. And I'll tell you how I ended up. Everything was insane at my house when I was growing up. It was crazy, and that's all I knew. And I always tell the new guys when they come in, stay away from the pamphlets. Don't go getting up in the pamphlets right away, because there are some frightening pamphlets in there if you're brand new, you know. And one of the ones, the worst one, if you ever get a chance to look at it, it's the pamphlet to the teenage alcoholic. It's like, know what they did? It seems like they were sitting in New York and they said, let's get so-and-so's grandma to write this one, you know. And because it's a pamphlet that asks you a bunch of questions that there's no way you can answer no to any of them. You know what I mean? It's like, do you ever black out? Yeah? And? Do you know what I mean? It seems like maybe there should be a little something extra. Like, do you ever black out and wake up in women's clothes sleeping with another man? You know what I mean? Like something, you know, where you go, all right, I got a problem. That was rough. You know, and, you know, whatever, you know? And it's like, lower companions. Are you hanging out with lower companions? Are you not? You know what I mean? Are you hanging out with upper companions when you get here? It's not like, you know, you're sitting at church somewhere and the priest gets done. It's like, hey, you want to get some blow and rob a liquor store? You know what I mean? It's like, it's not going on, you know? And you're supposed to be comparing yourself to these people you're hanging out with? It's like, I remember somebody go, hey, you peed yourself. It's like, yeah, a little up front. Look at him. He's got it down both legs. He's a mess. You know, it's like that kind of thing, you know? And even going to jail sometimes was fun when you're drinking and you end up in jail, you know? I remember one night that I sat there and I remember these guys showed up at my house. I go, you want to go to jail? And they go, yeah. I go, okay, you know? And we headed out and ended up in jail. And, you know, a lot of that kind of stuff going on. And the guys that I was surrounded with, I was the man by doing that stuff. You know, I mean, it was juice. People would clap when I showed up at parties, you know, after standoffs with the police and all that insanity. And the alcoholic life becomes the only life we know. We don't know any better. We don't know any different. At least for me, I didn't know any better. I'm living at my mom's house. I get a girl pregnant. I say, move in. Come on, move in here with me and mom. And so she moves in. And at the same time she moved in, I fell in love with an underage girl that I met on the street. I took her to Mexico and married her. So while I got one pregnant girl living at my house, I'm down marrying another girl in Mexico. And I don't know if you ever seen Apocalypse Now, but I was Colonel Kurtz, man. I was bald, bloated, way upriver, and somebody needed to terminate my command. And that's what's going on, right? So here's how I got to AA. Here's how I ended up with you guys here. A buddy of mine got busted on a cocaine trafficking charge in front of my home. My mother's home, sorry. In front of my mother's home. And this wasn't my home. Anyway, and it was funny because he's a cute guy. He's not as cute now, but he's cute then, right? And he's like freckles and curly hair, a little surfer boy, right? And he is not going to do well in county, if you know what I'm saying, right? So it's funny to me that he gets busted. Now, he gets busted, and he goes to court. And this is an opinion. I've got a lot of opinions, but I will warn you before giving them to you. A lot of people around here won't. I will. Here's one of them. I believe more alcoholics are created in court than anywhere else in the world. Not the first drink, not the local bar. It's court. Because hundreds of thousands of us go into court every day, non-alcoholic. And we get in front of the judge, goes, Mr. Smith, you're looking at a year sentence. But if you're an alcoholic, you could do a 60-day treatment program. I'm an alcoholic, sir, you know? All of a sudden, I got to take this off. I'm sorry, I'm dying. And anyway, all of a sudden, everybody's won, right? Except one guy. I said that at this meeting one time, and this guy walks up. He's tatted all over. He walks up. He goes, I did the year, dog. Well, then you're a stupid alcoholic, champ. I don't know what to tell you, man. You know, it's like, so that's what my buddy does. He pleads, I got a problem, and they send him off to rehab. And you guys get in there, and you do your working on him, whatever you guys are working on these people up there in, right? And you get him all healed up, and he comes back to Long Beach with us walking hand in hand with Bill, Bob, and Jesus Tripp. Do you know what I'm saying? And he's going to save the neighborhood. You know the new guy, when they want to save the neighborhood, it's like, that's what he's going to do. He comes back. Where's the first place he goes? My mother's house. And I get this. I go, hey, what's up, dude? You got a problem, man. I go, what? I go, you got the problem, champ. I saw you go down. And he goes, go to a meeting. I'm like, meeting? What do you mean meeting? He goes, go to a meeting. I'm like, what do you mean go to a meeting? I go, why do I got to go to a meeting? He goes, because you're an alcoholic. I go, no, I'm not. I live at my mom's. What are you talking about? You know, it's like, what? And he says, go, go, go. And we're arguing about whether or not I'm an alcoholic in the front door of my mom's place, right? At the time, I got the underage marriage. I got a pregnant girl gone. I got warrants for my arrest. I got people trying to kill me, both real and imagined. My life is a mess, right? Because some people just come in here with imaginary killers. I had real people after me. And anyway, that's a long, another whole thing. But anyway, the girl I married hired some guys. But anyway, so big mess. I'm sitting there. He's saying, go to a meeting, you're an alcoholic. I'm like, nuh-uh. No. And we're arguing back and forth. And for some reason, I said, yeah, I'll go. For some reason, I said, yeah, now why? I don't know why. I don't really like him. You know what I mean? He's smaller than me. Why am I saying yes? You know? And I said yes. And the meeting I went to was the Rap Center in downtown Long Beach. And it was the kind of meeting you push your shopping cart up out front and go inside, you know what I mean? And if a girl had most her teeth, I was stoked. You know, it's like, yeah, she's got three up front. Nice. You know, that whole deal, you know. And I don't got any either, so it's all right. But anyway, so I remember walking in that meeting, living at my mother's, no money, no job, no car, nothing, mess, warrants, all this stuff. I remember walking in that first meeting, loser. Scumbag, know that dude from school, bro. Never get high with you. And I'll tell you why I'm not like you guys. Because I'm a Cary Grant visiting drunk dude. I'm a smooth drunk. I go out and get a couple of drinks in me, and the first place it hits me is my cheeks, and I start smiling. I get a couple more in me, and I decide I want to take a walk. And I'll head off from the bar, and I head down the street, and I see a light on. I come up and knock on the door. Hey, who are you guys? I saw the light on. I'm just stopping by. Hi. You know, it's like, that's me. I'm a visiting drunk, man. You know, it's like, I'm the kind of drunk you find in your picnic. It's like, do you know that dude? Hey. You know? Give me a drink, and I like you, man. Give me a drink and a pill. I won't give you a big hug. I love you, man. You know? Give me a drink, a pill, and a line of cocaine. I want to start a business with you, bro. You know, it's like, that's how I think. You take that out of me, I want you dead now. You know? And I didn't get it. And I didn't understand the disease alcoholism. I'm not an alcoholic. It's these people. It's my mom. It's you try. I'm not an alcoholic. I'm married to an underage girl. You try that. It's stressful, man. You know, it's like, that's what I'm thinking. I didn't get it. And real quick, shame on you guys, man. Shame on you, the people in Alcoholics Anonymous that saw a new man walk into that meeting and didn't come up to me and say, what are you doing here? What are you doing here? Didn't come up to me, didn't stick a hand out, didn't ask me what I was doing. I am taught that Alcoholics Anonymous is my home. I need to treat this like my home wherever I am. And when that new man shows up, I need to walk up and say, hi, how you doing? What are you doing here? What's going on? How are you? A lot of times in AA meetings, you'll see we ask for visitors, but then they never ask them to share. They don't ask them to participate. They don't ask them what they're doing there. This is our family. It needs to be treated like our family. Could you imagine walking into your house and there's a dude on the sofa and it's like, who are you? I'm Mike from Nebraska. I'm gonna go get a shower, bro. You know what I mean? It's like you'd go, what are you doing here, man? What's up? Why are you here? Why are you in our home? Why did you come to our program? What's going on? No one talked to me. No one came up to me. And I want to thank you guys because I was in a meeting this morning and I looked real scruffy, man. I'm wearing ripped up jeans, a shirt that's all messed up. I got a turban on my head. You know, a big overweight guy in a turban sitting in the meeting. And everybody in there said, hey, how you doing? You know, and shook my hand and welcomed me. Welcome me to that meeting. I really want to thank you. It's a great example of Alcoholics Anonymous in Las Vegas to see that kind of thing going on. But no one came up to me at that meeting I went to. No one talked to me. And what the big shame about that is, and the book talks about it, armed with certain facts about ourselves, we can gain the confidence of that new man. We are probably the first people in that new man's life that is not going to look at him and go, what's wrong with you? Because we know what's wrong with you. You know what I mean? It's like, I know we're not supposed to say anybody's an alcoholic, but you can tell. You know what I mean? Talk to us for 5 or 10 minutes. It's real quick to find out. You know what I'm saying? Go to a restaurant. Lady comes in a walker. When she falls down, look around to see who's laughing and ask them where the meetings are. You know what I mean? So anyway, sorry about that. But anyway, so, I mean, we just think differently, you know? And what they could have said is they could have asked me, well, Jack, okay, what's going on in your life? What's happening? What do you think about this stuff? And I would have told them what I thought about their little program and their little meetings and their little ideas. And what they could have told me, they could have said, son, before you leave here, before you walk away from here, take a look in our book. Because they talk about you in that book. And not you don't even have to look at the whole book. Just look right here in the doctor's opinion, because they talk about you. They talk about a person that gets a sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once from taking that first drink. And that's what I got. And I didn't even need to take the drink to get it. Just the thought of taking a drink made me feel better. I would be somewhere going nuts, just stressed out, just all wound up and just going crazy. And all of a sudden that bing, that little cocktail light would flash on in my brain. And I'd go, bye-bye, I'm leaving. And I'd get in the car and take off, whose ever car, and drive off. On the way to the liquor store, I feel better. I feel better. I get to the liquor store, I'm feeling 100 times better. Not one drop of booze has touched my lips, and I am already getting the mental part of this disease satisfied. Because I know what's coming. I know what's coming. It's already feeling better. I'm feeling better. Not one drop of booze is in me. I'm already getting results from alcohol. I go into the liquor store, I smile, he smiles. I'm feeling much better. I order the vodka. I walk outside. I take the cap off and throw it. You do not need the cap once the bottle's open. That's for transportation purposes only. Get rid of the cap. I take that first drink, and when it gets inside, it's like being hugged by God. It's like a pair of arms goes around me. It says, you know what? It's okay now. It's okay now. I take another drink. I don't live at my mom's anymore. I take another drink, my girlfriend just got older. I take another drink, I just got a new job. Did you know I was a detective? You know what I'm saying? It's like, and I went down for that one time. But anyway, so it was a bad mistake, and it started sober. But anyway, I feel better when the booze is in me. I feel it when it gets inside. I feel better. I feel better. It's sobriety is my problem. Sobriety is the problem. And let me warn you real quick, you guys that come in here and think you're going to do this by just stopping drinking, you know, the little half measures, you hear half measures avail you nothing. I'll tell you something else. One-third measure avails you nothing. Because when you come around here and you learn about the disease of alcoholism, we got a threefold disease. We got the physical allergy and the obsession. We got the mental problem, and we also got the spiritual problem. One-third measure means you just stop drinking. If you are one of us and a real alcoholic, that means you got two-thirds of this disease kicking your ass. You just stop drinking. It's 2-1 against now. Now you're dealing with the emotional, and now you're dealing with being cut off from God. And it's not okay, and it doesn't feel good. When a real alcoholic stops drinking, it gets worse. It's not okay. You get a hard drinker around here and they stop drinking, all of a sudden they show up. You know what I mean? They go to work, they smile at people and push their shopping cart back. You know what I mean? You take the booze out of a real alcoholic, man. It's not okay. It's not okay. And after a while, that period of sobriety is intolerable. It's intolerable. And you have to take another drink to get relief. You've got to do something to get it to stop. You know, a lot of people come in here, especially brand new, and they hear all these horror stories, and they hear these stories about this guy with the 502s or the DUIs, whatever, and the lost wife, and prison, and jail, and jail, and you hear all this stuff, and you say, I'm not an alcoholic because of this, and I'm not like this guy, and I'm not like this guy. The book makes it real simple and real clear. If when you honestly want to, you can't stop drinking, and if you do stop, you can't stay stopped, you're probably an alcoholic. Makes it real simple. Cuts out all the crap, and it just makes it real simple. When you quit, can you stay quit? Can you stay quit? You know, I could never stay quit. I walked out of that meeting. I diagnosed myself non-alcoholic and said, I'm out of here. I'm gone. Bye. I'm gone. I took off from that meeting. I tried to do this on my own. I was one of those guys that you see around here. They go in, out, you see them. I was coming late, leaving early. I'm not really an alcoholic, so I don't got to do this thing, you know. And I was trying to stay sober on my own, and I did stay sober on my own. One time I got 30 days, 30 solid days. No drinking, no drugs, no meetings, no God, no help, 30 solid days. And on my 30th day, I got a job as a bartender. Because I thought that that would be a good job. You know, I could hang out, that kind of thing. And on my way to work, I stopped by to pick up some mushrooms for a friend. And and I'm bragging to this guy about how sober I am. I'm telling him, he goes, how's it going, Jack? I go, oh, it's going real good, man. Real good. Baby's gone. You know, underage girl's gone. Mom's doing good. I, you know, 30 days, I'm all cleaned up. I got a new job. Is that your bong? Bam. Cunning, baffling, and powerful, alcohol disguised itself as a skunk bud and hidden this dude's bong. So isn't that rough? I always get old guys going, is he talking about drugs? Anyway, so I lean out, is that your bong? Boom, I wake up with the bong in my mouth. I come to, the book talks about it. I had a strange mental blank spot. All of a sudden, I come to, I got the bong in my mouth, and I thought, oh my God, I just took a hit of weed. Here I am telling this guy, I'm sober, I'm stoned. Bam, that fast, right? My first thought is, I'm not going back to AA on one bong hit. You know what I mean? What am I going to do? Come in and go, yeah, I surrender. I took a bong hit. I'll be GSR. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah, right. You know what I mean? My next thought is, whoa. You overreacted on all that sober business. Thought after that is, it's gonna be different this time. Here's how. And what I did is, since I smoked some weed, I figured I need a little drinky poo to wash it down. And since I'm drinking and smoking weed, these mushrooms are surely not gonna get delivered. And I did what I had to do, 5 grams worth, and head off to work, my first day on the job. And I was fired within a half an hour of getting there. And the funny thing is, that's not even a record around here. You know that? It's like, Sometimes I'll see my friends, you know, and they got, like, you know, these guys got tons of years. They were sober before my dad was born. I mean, that kind of deal, you know. And I'll see them peacocking around. I'll go, dude, come on, take a look at where you are. You're an AA, bro. Take it easy with all that pride business, man. You're at a place where getting fired in a half an hour on your first day is not a record. Try it one time. Go to a meeting, go, yeah, I was fired half an hour on my first day. Someone will raise their hand and go, I was fired in 15 minutes on my first day. And then someone else will raise their hand and go, didn't even go my first day, bro. So it's like, you know. So before you get too cocky, remember where you are, man. And anyway, so I'm fired. I'm out on the street. I'm downtown Long Beach. I'm staggering around. I'm threatening people. You know, I'm out there losing my mind. And God shows up. Now, God that night was riding around in the body of a buddy of mine. Him and God are out for a little stroll. He's an AA guy. He sees me. He goes, Jack, what's going on? I go, take me to my mom's. I'm losing it, bro. You know, it's like I'm just out there, man. And he goes, okay, I'll take you home. I'll take you home. Come on. He gets me in the car. He takes me home. When he drops me off, he says, we'll talk about this tomorrow. Well, I know what that means. You know what I mean? I've heard that a lot. When you get picked up from jail late at night, it's always, talk about this tomorrow. When you get picked up and someone's helping you get your car out of impound, you know what I mean, late night, we'll talk about this tomorrow, dude, you know. When you're stalking somebody and you're at a phone booth and the cops are looking for you and they come get you, we're going to talk about this tomorrow, man. You know what I mean? That kind of, so I know what's coming. We'll talk about this tomorrow means lecture. Lecture. And I've heard lectures my whole life, and this is a we don't drink AA guy that's seen me half-ass in these meetings, that saw me hammered, that took me home. I owe him it. You know what I mean? He took me home, I owe him it. So the next day, we're talking, and we're talking nice on the phone, and he's not bringing it up. So I bring it up. I go, hey. Woo. I go, whoo, last night was rough, huh? You know, he goes, yeah. I go, hey, that's a rough one, huh? Hey, where's the car, bro? Hey, come on, you know, laughing. It's like, yeah, you know, last night, huh? He goes, yeah. Know what I was waiting for? I was waiting for Jack, you're a loser. Jack, you're a scumbag. Jack, you're an animal. Jack, you're trash. I'd heard it my whole life. I've heard it from anyone that ever had any contact with me. Loser, scumbag, animal, trash. I'd heard it my whole life, and I'm waiting to hear it from this guy. Because he's a we don't drink, we don't do drugs AA guy that's seen me half-ass in these meetings, seen me coming in and out, saw me drunk. I'm waiting for the lecture, and it ain't coming. I said, hey, man, I lost my job. You know, I'm back at my mom's. I lost my job. You know, I got drunk. And he goes, I know, Jack. He goes, you know what? He goes, you might be an alcoholic. He goes, if you're an alcoholic, you can't stop drinking. And if you do stop, you can't stay stopped on your own power for any length of time. That was the first time in my life that I ever heard that. I wish that guy was still here. But 2 weeks later, on November 13th of 1988, that guy went out and he tried heroin for the first time and he died that night in the car. That man's name was Don Langston. I owe my sobriety to him. A couple of years ago, I went to his grave and I laid a 15-year chip down on his grave and I looked at the headstone and I never realized it before, but he was only 21 years old when he died. I was brought into Alcoholics Anonymous surrounded by death. For me, I didn't end up getting sober until January 8th of 1989, and I don't know why that day. I don't know why God pulled the plug that day and said, you're done. And what God did for me that day is he pulled the compulsion away from me, but not the obsession. I still thought about drinking all the time. I thought about drinking. And thank God for Dr. Bob. And thank God for his story in the big book. Because Dr. Bob also thought about drinking all the time. For years, he said he had that desire to drink. For years after being sober. I mean, sometimes I'll go to an open discussion meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I don't know if you've heard this a lot around here. But I'll go to an open discussion meeting. And I'll hear a man come in. And he'll raise his hand and say, I feel like drinking. And some smart ass will yell out, I got $5, go do it. Have you ever heard that? It's like, is that insane? Where else are you supposed to go if you feel like drinking? Not here, son. Don't bring that one to drink around here. Where's the drunk supposed to go if he feels like drinking? Target? I have no idea, you know? It's like drunk in aisle 9 needs to get down. You know what I mean? It's like, say it. Say it. Come in here and say it. And if you're one of those guys yelling that stuff off, knock that crap off. It is unbelievable. If we treated people with a little more respect around here, guys with time might be around here a little longer. A lot of these people are afraid to say, I feel like drinking. I'm cheating on my wife. I'm not doing good in work. Things aren't okay because they want to look good in AA. And yes, I admire and I respect your time, and I'm so glad you're here to show me that way, but if you've got time and you're lying to me, you're killing me. And you're killing the new man when he comes in. When you come into Alcoholics Anonymous and you've got an amount of time and you share what's really going on with you, then I know I can make it. I know I can do it. If you can do it, I can do it. If you lie to me, I'm dead. Because I start thinking it's not okay. When I start hanging around here sober and all of a sudden I got thoughts going on, all of a sudden I'm thinking I'm the only one in here that thinks like this. Because I hear you guys and you guys are great. And it's always great. And every morning when you wake up, your wife smells good. You know what I mean? Sometimes mine doesn't. And you know what I mean? And it's all right. And knowing that. And knowing sometimes, because, and also with the booze thing, sometimes booze looks good. It looks good. It's like I hear guys going, I never had any fun drinking. Well, then what end of the bottle were you opening, my man? I have no idea. I was at 4th of July, we have a parade that goes down my street, right? And there's guys across the street drinking. Now, there's a dude over there, and he's got his Corona in his hand, and I'm 300 yards away, and I can see the beads coming down that thing. You know what I mean? And he's got a couple girls under his arm, and this guy, a new guy next to me, looks over and goes, sure glad I'm not drinking. Well, what part of that looks bad? You know what I mean? It's like, dude. You know what I mean? I'm not looking over there and seeing him peeing himself, you know what I mean, and puking and losing his job. I see him with a couple of ladies, you know, and with a cool drink, you know, and just that thought. But if I can say it to you, if I can tell you that this is what I think, that this is what's going on, that I struggle with work sometimes, and that sometimes it is hard to work these principles and to do these steps, it's okay. It's okay if I can tell you, and if you can tell me, it's okay. It's okay. You know, thank God I was raised by guys that told the truth. I was raised by guys that told the truth. They never held back. They never lied to me. Those were the men I was raised by, and thank God for those guys for doing that for me. Like I said, I ended up getting sober on January 8th, but looking back from that relapse, I learned a ton of stuff. A ton of stuff from that relapse. One of the first things I learned from that relapse is this: just don't drink crap. If you come in here and you hook up with someone that's telling you to just not drink, just get away from them. Fast as possible. That is not the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you want to look in the 164, the words just don't drink don't even show up in there. As a matter of fact, it says go get down, try some, you know. Get yourself thoroughly convinced, champ. The words just don't drink don't show up. And as a matter of fact, if you look at these steps, the big book already assumes you're done drinking when you start these steps. Because if they didn't, there'd be tapering off steps on there. You know what I mean? I mean, like, step one would be get enough booze for the weekend. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, step two, shut off the phone. You know, step three, begun to taper. No, man. It talks about, are you done? Are you done? Are you thoroughly beat? Are you frustrated? Are you in despair? Are you terrorized? Are you bewildered? Have you tried every possible scam there is to feel better and none of them have worked? Because when you've done all that, come on. Get on this, because these work. These work. Get yourself thoroughly convinced. Get thoroughly convinced. And let me tell you something. Alcoholics Anonymous is also a scam. A lot of people use Alcoholics Anonymous as a scam. I'm going to just come in here and get my court card signed and get on up out of here. I'm going to come in here just to get the court off my back, just to get the wife to leave me alone, just to get my kids back. I'm going to get my kids back. I'm going to come in here and get my kids back. That's all a scam. It's all a scam. It doesn't work. It doesn't work unless something changes inside and you come into Alcoholics Anonymous because you want to be here, because you want this thing. Alcoholics Anonymous is not a punishment. This is not a punishment. I remember when my daughter was going through her deal, I never once said, get your ass to a meeting, because I don't want her to do that. I want her to come here because she sees results. I want her to come here because this is where it's happening, not because dad's making me go to a meeting. I mean, one of the opinions I got is this court card deal. I know a lot of people get saved by coming in here in court cards, but I wish we had a box outside that said, hey, you can get your court card signed right here. And if you want to come in, come on in. Come on in here, you know, because hopefully you hear something. a change of heart. Hopefully something comes over you. You know, and that was one of the things I learned about that relapse is just don't drink and stuff. If you're a real alcoholic, you got to do a ton of stuff other than just not drink. A ton of stuff. Look at the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Bill and Bob were always just not drinking, and they just got drunk every time. Every time. You know, we tell the new guys a lot of times when we come up to the new guys in here, I mean, think about the stuff we really tell the new man when he comes in. When the new guy comes in, sometimes we'll say, you know, get yourself a sponsor with time. You get a sponsor with time if you want to stay sober. Well, think back to the beginning of our program. Those are things that weren't even available to our founders of this program. They got nobody with time. You got a guy with 6 months helping a guy with no months. Okay, nobody's got time. One of the other things we suggest to the new man is, you better get that book. You study that book, son, if you want to get sober. Study it up. Study it up. Bill and Bob had no book. They got no book. They got nobody with time, and they got no book. Now what? Go to meetings every day. You better go to meetings every day. No meetings. No meetings, no book, nobody with time. Now what? Why did they stay sober? Why are we sitting here because of what those guys did? If you want to study the book, study what they did. Not just remembering words. It's great to cop a few phrases and yell out some stuff at us and stuff. Look at what they did. They got off their asses right away. They started reaching out, starting sticking a hand out to the new man, starting getting involved right away, learning to get out of self. And you'll hear guys come in here and say, well, you can't give away what you don't have. Of course you can't. Of course you might not be able to discuss all the steps with the new man. Of course you may not be able to discuss the traditions with a new man. But know what you can say when you're brand new? You can walk up to that new guy that's losing his wife and kids, that new guy that just lost his job, that new guy that's losing everything in his life, and you can walk up and say, I know what it feels like, man. I'm losing my wife and kids too. I'm losing my job too. I don't know what to do either, man. And that common thing clicks up. That common thing happens. I heard this guy one time, it was great, one of my sponsee guys, and I don't even call him sponsees, one of my special friends. This guy, somebody said, do you want what your sponsor's got? And I'm waiting to hear this guy talk nicely of me, you know? And the guy goes, nope, don't want what he's got. You know? I go, what? And he goes, I didn't get my sponsor because I want what he's got. I got my sponsor because he's got what I got. That's why I got my sponsor. Because when that guy calls me, I understand. When that guy calls me, I know what it feels like to be him. I know what it feels like to be hurt, to be confused. That's why that guy got me as a sponsor or a friend, to be there for him, you know, to understand him, you know. And I'll tell you, that was one of the first things. The other thing I learned from that relapse is to be kind, to be kind. You know, I don't understand where this thing in Alcoholics Anonymous, where this disrespect of the new man ever came from. How can you possibly disrespect? The book says we don't talk down to people. We don't treat people with disrespect. That is not the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. If someone is treating you with disrespect, get away from them. They're not working a program. That's not what we're about. Alcoholism is a disease. It is a disease. You can't yell it out of a man. You can't belittle a man into being sober. And you can't lecture a man into being sober. The big book knew that. If I could get sober through a lecture, I would have got sober in third grade, man. You know what I mean? The first time, it's like, you're right, sir. I'll never do it again. You know, it's like, doesn't work with us. The big book knew that, and it says we don't treat people like that. Study the book. Look what it says how we treat the new man. We treat him with respect. Could you imagine going in a cancer ward and going, oh, that little bitty tumor you got? That's a little bitty tumor. Why don't you go out and get a bigger tumor before you come back? Is that crazy? It's crazy, but it's the same thing. Alcoholism is a disease. You know, to treat people with kindness. And I'll tell you, one of the most beautiful things that in the big book that I just love dearly, a great example of that is in Bill Wilson's story. And it's when Bill's still drinking and his buddy Ebby, if you're new, Ebby was one of Bill's partners, you know, his pals, and he loved Ebby and they used to drink together. And Bill's in New York and he's drinking at the time, right? He's hanging out in New York and he's drinking and Ebby's coming by. Well, Bill's stoked. It's his drinking buddy. You know what I mean? Bill starts going, I remember when we got a plane. This is going to be good, man. Ebby's coming by. This is nice. Ebby shows up sober. All right, that's weird. You know what I mean? Bill's tripping. It's like, hey, I thought this guy was in an asylum or something. You know what I mean? It's like, and he shows up sober. All right, that's weird. Okay. Then Bill finds out that Ebby's got religion. That's frightening. Do you know what I mean? Could you imagine having all the booze out on the table and whatever else you got laid out, and your buddy's coming over and he shows up with a Bible in his hand? You know, it's like, hey, you're going to have a bad time, man. You know what I'm saying? It's like, unless you got some acid, this is going to get rough, man. And after that, Bill Wilson says, he looks at him, you know, and he says, oh, well, let him rant. The old boy's looking good. Let him rant. Hopefully, my gin will last longer than this old boy's ranting. And then right after that, he says something that's so important. God, it wouldn't have been in the book if it wasn't so important. But it said, but he didn't rant at all. In a matter-of-fact way, Ebby said, Bill, check me out, man. Some guys picked me up from court. They showed me a spiritual way to live. They helped me out. Look at me, man. Look at me. And Bill looked at him and saw something in his eyes and said, I want that. I want that. And that's why we're here. Attraction, not promotion. He saw it. He wanted it. That's why we're sitting here, because of that. It doesn't say that Ebby came over and caught Bill drinking and said, Bill, you're a scumbag. Bill, you're a loser. Bill, you're trash. He said, want some, get some. He didn't walk over there and say, Bill, goddammit, you're not going to date in your first year. You know what I mean? He said, none of that. You know? He said, do you want some? Come get some. Look at it. And that's why we're sitting here. You know, I go in a lot of hospitals. I go in a lot of institutions. And I'll tell you, one of the most successful 12-step calls I ever made in my whole life had nothing to do with the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous or the program in any way. However, it had everything to do with the program. I was at this Mother's Day art festival in Sunset Beach, and it's by my house, and that's where we used to go, and, you know, we get drunk, and then you bring home broken gifts for mom later on, and, you know, my mom's still got a frog I gave her with no legs. It's broken, you know, and it's in a position of honor at my mother's house, you know, and she's always like, remember when you got me the frog? It's like, no, I don't. It looks good, Mom. Love it, you know, that kind of thing. So I'm down there this one day, and I'm sober for 6 years when I'm down there. And I've been around you guys, and I've been doing this thing. And I'm walking down, and they're real tight aisles, about as tight like this, between these booths. And I'm walking down, and here comes one of my old victims coming the other way. A guy I used to humiliate, abuse. One time I kissed this guy in the mouth in front of a bunch of people, called him a little sissy. I go, I'll just give you a kiss, baby. Come here. Like, you know, he humiliated this guy. He wanted me dead. And it was like when he saw me, I don't know if you've ever seen Fridays, but it was like Debo's coming. You know what I mean? He's hiding his stuff and he sees me. He can't get away. I'm walking. I look at this guy. I see him. I go, how you doing, man? It's good to see you. And I kept walking. And the guy goes, what? What was that? He walks over to these people. He goes, hey, I just saw Jack. He's not drunk. He didn't threaten me. He's not beating on anybody. What's going on? He smiled and said hi to me. And they go, oh, he's over there, that AA cult. He's hanging out with those guys down there, right? Well, the next morning at 7 a.m., that guy was sitting on the steps at our morning meeting. He's been sober ever since. You know, the guy's been sober over 10 years now. Never said a thing to him except hello. Never said a thing. But what he saw is what happens to us when we wear the program. When you wear this love, when you wear the kindness of the program, you can be a lot quieter about who you got to tell about it, because they see it. These people see a difference in us. They see the way we act, and they want it. They want it. And, you know, real quick, like I said, I ended up getting sober, and I was hanging out here for a year and a half and not really thinking I was an alcoholic. I'm just saying it. I'm just saying, yeah, I'm an alcoholic, I'm an alcoholic, I'm an alcoholic. And that trouble with that first step, admitting we're an alcoholic, is I'm an alcoholic, and I'll admit to anything. I'll say anything to get you to leave me alone. Yeah, I'm an alcoholic, sure. Overeater, too. Gambler, dog guy, I'm in. You know, whatever it is. Right? I'll say it. And I'm not believing it. And let me tell you when I really worked my first step. It was at a year and a half of sobriety, and I heard something. This guy, man was speaking, Scottish Alex with the eye patch. Alex was talking, and I'm listening, and I'm not usually listening, but I was listening that time. And Alex said something. He said, between drinks was his trouble. When he was drinking, he was a hail fellow, well-met kind of guy. And when I heard that, I thought, oh my God, man. Oh my God, this guy's an alcoholic, and I think just like that, I'm an alcoholic too. And I was frightened, man. Because I'll tell you, between drinks was my trouble. When I got in here, it got worse. It was like that tidal wave that happened in the Pacific, and God bless those people that are gone. But I'll tell you, when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, it was like riding up in here in a wave. It was a wave of insanity, but I'm on the top of it, and I'm riding in here, and I ride up into Alcoholics Anonymous, and the wave starts receding, and it pulls that bottle out of my mouth, and it pulls the pills out of my hand, and it starts sucking back. And when it starts sucking back, all of a sudden, okay, there's some wreckage. Here's some wreckage, a little bit of wreckage. Start sucking back a little more, and there's a little more wreckage. And if you remember those reports in the Pacific, the first report was 10,000 dead. And the next report was no, 20, then 30, 40, 50, 70. It got enormous. That's what it was like. When the booze started receding, all of a sudden there's some wreckage. You live at your mom's, dude. Start sucking back a little more. You owe $20,000 in back child support. Start sucking back a little more. You have a father whose death you were blamed for. Start sucking back a little more. Incest, physical abuse, child abuse. I was left in a wasteland of Alcoholics Anonymous with no booze to fix it, no booze to feel better. And when I woke up, it was frightening, frightening. Could you imagine if you woke up the first day you came to AA? The very first day you came in here, if you woke up, could you imagine what that would really be like? It'd be like, hey, for the new man, we got cookie, coffee, and rope in the back there. You know, I mean, because when you wake up to what's really, what you have done to people, it is sickening. When you wake up to what you've done to the people that care for you, the friends, the family, the people you are never going to see again, when you wake up to that, it is frightening, it is sickening, and it is not all right. And when you really wake up and that first step comes in your heart and you realize what you've done to people and you get that change of heart, all of a sudden you never ever need another man to tell you to go to a meeting again. Never ever. Because you know this is going to save your ass. When you wake up and you really see what you are, you start diving in here and those steps become something that you want to do. If somebody's making you do them, don't do them, man. You know what I mean? Don't do them. Do them because you want to do it. Do them because you're in here. Do them because you know this is a way out and it's going to be okay. Make amends to these people because what you did was wrong. What you did was wrong and you hurt these people and they deserve your respect. You know, and I'll close with this. I got a couple of minutes, man. I want to talk about God. And God was something that was very frightening to me. I've done a lot of creepy stuff, man. I was involved in a punk rock band my whole life, and you know, I broke into churches, dug up graves, kidnapped people. I mean, I did a lot of evil, frightening stuff to people. I was not a nice guy to run into a lot of times, and I knew any God out there wanted me dead. He just hadn't gotten around to it yet, and I was afraid. I had a damning, leg-breaking God, and what I was taught here is instead of turning my will and my life over to the care of that God, turn my thoughts and my actions over to the care of Alcoholics Anonymous. Start here. Start here. Turn your will and your life, your thoughts and your actions over, and your understanding of God will come. The big book talks about it in page 55 in the chapter to the agnostics. It says, through this stuff, the consciousness of the belief in God that is inside us will show up by doing these steps. You know, a lot of people want to do the third step backwards. They want to understand a God, then turn their will and their life over to Him. But how can you understand a God when you don't come in here with a lot of godly attributes? You're not loving, not kind, not compassionate, not unconditional. We learn those things through doing the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And by doing those steps, God shows up. And God always shows up. I found my God through my little daughters, man. I first got introduced to my God by my 18-year-old, and I got baptized by my other one. And I'll tell you that story real quick. I'm a Christian now, and I'm not a scary Christian. You know what I mean? I'm not going to make anybody submit. And you know what I mean? I don't got any opinion on outside issues, none of that. It's just, that's what I do. That's my deal. And I'm okay with it. And you know, I found that God through you guys, but I've never been baptized. And I always wanted to be baptized. You know, I thought, you know, hey, that would be, I need to be baptized, right? So I asked Father Leo. A lot of you guys know Leo. I'm friends with Leo. And I said, hey, Leo, will you baptize me? And he's like, oh, sure, Jack, man. Yeah, you know, like Leo is. And so we're talking about it. And I thought maybe he could give me a little dip over by the coffee pot or something. I don't know, whatever he works out. And then he said to me, he goes, you know, Jack, he goes, anyone can baptize you. Anyone can. And so I'm thinking, wow, I didn't know that, you know, and I got thinking about that, right? So I'm at the house one night, my wife and I are in the kitchen, I go, hey, I'm going to go baptize a kid, man, and because my little one, my six-year-old. So I go in there, and I walk in, and there she is laying in bed, you know, and I smile, and I come up, and because I tuck her in at night, and I say, hey, sweetheart, is it okay if I talk to you about God? And she goes, yeah, of course, man. And I go, you know how God loves us and that we're all His kids and we're together and that we need to look out for one another? And she goes, yeah. And I go, and you know how much God cares for you? And she goes, yeah, I do. I go, do you mind if I mark you as one of God's kids? And she goes, no. And she doesn't have any teeth, right? There's no little teeth there. And so I had gotten this water in the kitchen. I asked God to bless it. I said, please bless this water, God. You know what I want to do with it. So I had the bowl of water, and I dip my fingers in, and I lean over my little girl. I say, I baptize you in the name of the Father, the Son, the Holy Spirit. And I lean over, and I give my daughter a kiss, and I give her a hug. And I turn around to start to walk away, and she goes, can I do you? And I go, yeah, man, yeah, come on, you know. And I get that little water, and that little girl dips her fingers in, and I ended up getting baptized by my six-year-old. And I tell you, I couldn't have had a better person to do it, a sweet, loving, innocent girl that's never seen her father drunk, that's never been hurt by her daughter, never abused, never raped by her father, never hurt, because that's how I grew up with, you know. And I don't do that anymore because of you guys. The gifts of Alcoholics Anonymous are unbelievable. And sometimes I'll hear guys come in here and they'll say, I paid for this seat. I paid for this seat. I doubt it. I mean, that's such an alky thing to say. I paid for it. Yeah, I bet you did. Let's ask your wife who paid for that seat, champ. You know what I mean? Let's make a call to your parents and find out who paid for your seat in Alcoholics Anonymous, because I sure bet it wasn't you. It was probably anyone that ever loved you. Anyone that ever cared about you, anyone that ever was next to you paid for your seat in Alcoholics Anonymous, and they paid dearly. And for that, you owe them. This crap about Alcoholics Anonymous being a free gift is a joke. This is not a free gift. We look at our seventh tradition, it says that we need to be self-supporting through our own contributions. We also need to be spiritually self-supporting. We need to pay for this gift. I see these guys come in here and they take from Alcoholics Anonymous. They get their wives back, the kids, the jobs. They get everything back and they turn and they walk away from us. And they leave us. They take what we have and they leave. And after a while, they feel miserable. And they come back here miserable, if they do come back at all. And they raise a hand and they say how miserable they are. You want to know why you're miserable? Because you're a leech, man. That's why you're miserable. You have taken from Alcoholics Anonymous and you do not give back. Alcoholics Anonymous is like a credit card being given to us by God, and God expects payment. And that payment is the destruction of self. The whole purpose of those steps is so you can be a better servant to God and your fellows. The seventh step talks about it. It says, why do we take an inventory? Because we want God to remove these things so we can be better servants to Him, better servants to God. And that was something I never wanted to be. You know, and I just want to thank you so much for the life that you've given me and the things that you have. And if you're new, there's plenty of other ways to get sober. Our book is a suggestion, just like church is a suggestion, or yoga, or wherever you go is a suggestion. However, if you take our book as the suggestion that you want to stay sober, then there's a ton of stuff you must do. You must follow those directions of our suggestion to stay here. And I want to thank you for having me.